What up? It's the man we all know and love, Kwame. And I'm down with my man, Odd Man, on Down with the King on Maximum FM Hip Hop. Let's go.
Turn up the bass.
You're listening to Down with the Kings on Maximum FM Hip Hop.
What's going on? It's the Odd Man here, and we're back with Down with the Kings, and I'm pleased to be joined by this Queens native who broke on the scene back at the age of 16. He calls himself a scientist of sound, the boy genius. It's a guy we all know and love. Kwame, welcome to the show.
Yo, man, thanks for having me. Definitely. What's up?
Hey, we're good, and I appreciate you. You know, you taking the time. You know, it's funny when you sort of think back on your career. You know, you've been in the game for a real long time. 16 years old, man. That's got to be crazy when you think about it.
Yeah, man. You know, when I really think about it, I look back and I say, "Dag, I've been in the game longer than I've been." You know, I've been in the game my whole entire adult life. Mm-hmm. And half of my childhood, you know, so, you know, it's like, it's kind of dope, you know what I'm saying? Because this is something that I always wanted to do, and I didn't want it to be a hobby. I wanted it to be a career.
Right.
So, you know, I found ways to maintain, you know?
Right, right. So when you talk about this is what you always wanted to do, was there ever a point, was there anything else, or you knew from the jump that, you know, I want to be in the business?
Well, you got to understand, when I was a kid, you know, rap started for me when I was 9 years old. And when rap started for me, rap started for pretty much most of the rest of the world.
Right.
So it wasn't anything that I understood as being a career, because it was a culture and a way of life since I was 9 years old. Mm-hmm. And when you saw that you can make money and it could feed your family and help you, you know, along your way in life. You know, I guess I was around 14, 15 years old when I realized that. And because before that, it was other things that I thought I was going to be. I was in school for graphic design. So I thought I was going to be an illustrator. I thought, you know, I was real, real good at science. So I thought I was going to, you know, do something in the science field. I didn't know, or I was really into fashion. So I didn't know what I was going to do, but I knew it was going to be within the arts.
Right.
But what my passion was music, and the bigger passion was hip-hop. So once I understood that hip-hop was an actual viable vehicle that could take me places, the whole paradigm shifted and I just went that way.
Right, right. The thing that I find, you know, most fascinating when you think about your career and your story is that, you know, most kids, you know, they want to rap, and that's what they want to do, but you want to do everything. You know, you're producing, you're arranging, you're rapping, you're doing it all.
You know what? Because my musical idols were Stevie Wonder and Prince. Mm-hmm. And when I was a kid, I would read, I was back when people had albums, I would read all of the liner notes on the album. And it always went back to produced, arranged, composed, and written by Prince or Stevie Wonder or whatever. So I thought every artist had to do that. You know, I didn't know that artists had writers and arrangers and producers. I had no clue about that. So, you know, and even with rap, you know, nowadays you have rappers getting their rhymes written by other rappers. It didn't ever happen that way when I was a kid. So it was just a natural progression of, okay, I thought this is what I wanted to do. I'm able to do it, so why not?
Right, right. Well, it's funny when you talk about, you know, ghostwriters, if you will, because, I mean, that was unheard of. I mean, you think about back in the day, you know, guys, you know, it was a test of manhood, so to speak, where they got in the, you know, they battled and they went back and forth. And, you know, to be able to say, yeah, so-and-so wrote my rhymes for me, like, that's unheard of.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it did happen, you know what
yeah.
I'm saying? But it was in the true sense of the term ghostwriter. Now you have somebody that puts out a record and it's like 50 writers on one record. And I can't even imagine how that works. But it's a different time and people work in different ways. So, you know, it is what it is.
Right, right. You know, when we sort of talk about the different time, and I think you also have a great perspective, again, your longevity in the industry, but also with the different facets you've been involved with, and you've seen some of those changes, and you've seen some of the advancements, the evolution of the music, and, you know, we spent a lot of time talking on this program about the changes, and, you know, a lot of the old school cats are like, yeah, we don't like them, because it's not, you know, what they knew, and, you know, there's varying opinions on the changes. Just curious what your thoughts are when you think about, you know, then and now.
You know, my big thought is people are afraid of change. When people are accustomed to something that make them very comfortable, any sort of change is going to be frowned upon.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of times that's where you get the old school cats not liking the difference in hip-hop. Saying that, it's very hard to like something new when you have proof and fact that the older thing that you grew up on and the older thing that you loved in many ways was better.
Right.
The only thing that's better now in hip hop is money. That's about it. You
right.
know what I'm saying? The only two things are better. Let me take that back. Money and the music creativity, meaning we do not rely on samples anymore.
Right.
And we're able to have a generation of artists and producers that are well versed in music to be able to create original hip hop music. That's a great thing, because it all still comes back down to money, because now you make more royalties and you have a more of a nest egg coming back to you.
Right.
The issue is that it's like a prefab home.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to an older home which lasted 200 years because of its construction, where these prefab homes will probably only last 30 years and then it gets torn down because the construction isn't as solid.
Right.
So that's how it feels with the newer music. The new songs come out, they come out very quickly, they're forgotten very quickly. And the unfortunate thing is they're given away. They're just
gotcha.
Like, here, take my song. Here, take my song. Here, take my song. So when you give things away, the value is totally taken down. And, you know, people don't see it that way. People see that, well, you know, I could put out a mixtape, I can make money. I could put out an actual album, I can make money. And the money aspect clouds the big, big, big picture. And then even more than that, when I was a kid, there was a standard in practice. Like, everybody had different type of hip hop. You had a choice.
Yeah.
And
yes.
And with that choice, you could have went the gangster route like N.W.A. You could have went the sexual route like Two Live Crew. You could have went the fun route like Kid and Play or myself. You could have went the intellectual route like KRS-One. You could have went the lyrical route like Rakim, Big Daddy Kane.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had choices. And unfortunately, due to corporations totally getting involved, especially here in the U.S., our choices are limited. Our choices are now pre-programmed slots
right.
that we have to be forced to listen to all day, every day. And you know, if I look at a chart, I can look at the top 10 records on a radio chart, and all I see is Cash Money. You know what I'm saying? That doesn't mean
right.
Cash Money isn't. That doesn't mean Cash Money is whack or
no.
good. It just means that they're able to get 8 out of the 10 slots.
Mm.
I don't see how that's good for anybody but Cash Money.
Gotcha.
And that's. From the experience that I have, that's what my perspective is. It's like, why do I have to be forced to only like this? And then I'm also forced to search and seek out that. You know what
right.
I'm saying? Because it's not like other type of hip hop isn't out here. It's all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's all types of hip hop out here, but we have to look for it.
Find
you know, it. I can come out to Toronto and go to a hip hop show and I'm going to see a bunch of lyrical people. Like, for example, I'll give you a perfect example.
Mm-hmm.
and I'm late to the game on, say, for example, somebody from Canada, Chaos. Let's use him as an example.
Okay, yeah.
I like Chaos. I love the record that he put out a long time ago, Superstar. I love that record to this day. I could tell somebody else about that record, and they won't have no idea about it because it just wasn't in the slots in America.
Right, right.
You know, so now I have to direct somebody to YouTube and now go check out Chaos and check out his new stuff and check out this, that, third, whatever. Because if I tell somebody, okay, he's from Canada, all they're going to think about is maybe Drake. You
right.
know,
right?
You know,
right.
Or and you may get some Cardinal or Fish Owl in there too. But
yep.
but what I'm saying is, it's like there has to be 100 more like that, just from Canada alone. But because they're not in our slot, we're never going to know unless we do the research. And you know
Got
how
it.
Lazy kids are, and
That's
so
it.
You put the information in their face, they're not going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my problem. When I was a kid in 1986, 1987, we had Mr. Magic Show, we had the Red Alert Show, and when these guys played records, and then we had our In the Middle of the Night college station, and we would hear anybody and everybody, if they were
sure.
from Texas, if
yep.
they were from wherever. We don't hear that now.
No.
So that, you know, so that's my long, drawn-out
answer. Well, it's interesting because, you know, very similar here in Toronto. I mean, you know, when I was a kid as well, much like yourself, there was, you know, we had that station that we checked out every Saturday from 1 to 4, and, you know, they played
yep.
everything on the Power Move show, and that's what you listened to. And all week, when you hung with your boys, you talked about what you heard that Saturday, and you're like, what we're going to
yep.
hear next Saturday. That's what it was all about. But it is very much different. And also, it suggests to me that, you know, it's certainly not just about the music anymore. You've got to be able to, whether it's market yourself or have someone being out there. I mean, social media is huge, and, you know, you could be a social media sensation and have zero talent.
Yep. And you know, hey, man, I'm never going to bash anybody for their opportunity, because the one thing I do know is this. For every one rapper that we hear, there are a million that we will never hear.
Correct.
And I believe in that actual estimate. You know, I believe in that ratio of numbers. So it's like, so for the fact that one rapper, good or bad, in my opinion, reached my ears, that means that person, whoever that person is, achieved a goal.
Right.
And and hey, his goal to be a super rapper may have happened 2 weeks before he came out with a record.
Mm.
Because a lot of rappers we hear clearly sound like that.
Yeah.
But it's still a goal achieved. And especially in the inner city situation, a lot of these young men do not ever achieve their goals. So that's why I'll never hate on someone doing a creative expression.
Right.
Whether
yep.
I like it or not. It's not for me. You know, that's the thing about, that's the beauty of music. Music is only a matter of opinion. It's never a matter of fact.
That's it.
There is no matter of fact in music at all, period. You know, just because a bunch of people may like the same person, that doesn't make that person hot or dope, or it doesn't mean nothing. It means that a bunch of y'all like it, you know.
That's right.
You know, there's plenty of rappers that I think are far superior to the big name rappers that are out that'll probably never get anything. You know, like, I would say Pharrell Monch is better than Drake. Somebody will be like, oh, no, you're out of your mind. I'm not,
right,
you know, I'm not
right,
saying that.
Right.
I'm using that as an example.
No, that's true, yeah.
So,
yep.
So, you know, it's like, you know, everybody has a matter of opinion, and you got to respect people's opinion. And that's the whole thing about hip-hop, is the everybody's opinionated nature, and it keeps the energy going. But one thing I'll never, ever, ever do is say, this one sucks, or this
gotcha.
One is not that, or whatever. That's not my place at all.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, you know, I mean, creativity is, it's all our own, and, you know, we express ourselves the way we do. You know, back in the day, you certainly expressed yourself. The polka dots, you got a lot of attention and popularity from those polka dots. talk about sort of what inspired that. And I know you mentioned earlier fashion was something you were big into. Was the polka dots meant as something to capture people's attention, or what was it about for you?
You know, it was never – polka dots was never a intended gimmick, for, let's say that. I was never intended to be the polka dot guy. My thing was, you know, I tell this story a lot. It was a matter of convenience. I had in the very, very beginning, I had one shirt. It was white with black polka dots. And then I had a tie that was black with white polka dots. And because I like to dress up, that shirt and that tie allowed me to match a whole bunch of black and white together. That was basically it. You know, and that's just due to lack of having any money. But when I put the shirt on the back of my first single cover, I wore the shirt in my first video. And from there, people recognized pretty much with the styling that I was doing, but they zoned in on the polka dots.
Gotcha.
So in the very beginning, I would start doing shows. Everybody in the audience would have on polka dots. And the blonde streak in the hair. And so I was like, okay, well, this is something that's catching on. It would be stupid of me to not continue with this. And I always felt like, you know, back to my musical idol, say Prince. Prince had purple. I know Prince doesn't wear purple every day, but
right.
I'm pretty sure he knows when to put it on and when not to put it on. And you know, Run DMC had Adidas. I'm pretty sure at some point Run DMC wanted to wear Air Force Ones, but, you know.
They couldn't.
Yeah, you know, it was like they there's a staple that they represented. And I think all of the bigger acts have some sort of recognizable symbol, clothing, or something, logo, whatever it is, that makes us feel
sure.
what they're doing. Like, I would never want to see Chuck D get on stage without his all black on. You know
that's
what I'm
it.
Saying? Or,
that's
like,
it.
Imagine Chuck D in a Hawaiian shirt.
Yeah, not even working.
With some shorts. And some Vans and flip flops. Imagine that. Like, that'll be the worst day of my life. You know?
That's it.
Or, you know, imagine KRS-One in skinny jeans and I don't know, and Chucks and a wife beater. You'd be like, what?
That's it. Yeah, you're in some kind of alternate universe.
Yeah, man, it's just not going to work. And the thing is, may happen because just like our favorite rock, you know, people's favorite classic rock dudes, once they get after that, after they hit like 65, they get on stage with their shorts, their Hawaiian shirts, and their, you know, their old man caps.
That's it.
Totally opposite. So, you know, Chuck D may just come out looking like that one day. You never know.
I'm a hope he doesn't. Between me and you, I hope he doesn't.
Yeah, right.
Right.
You know, that we were intelligent, that we had fashion sense, that we were, you know, we came from different type of backgrounds, but the culture was hip hop.
Yeah.
You know,
like
that was what
fun,
we tried to
music, right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. You know, so we weren't out here fighting, we weren't out here robbing you, we weren't out here selling drugs. We weren't, and rap turned into we are out here fighting, we are out here selling drugs, we are out here pimping and shooting and killing. You know, and that is why, back to your first question, why old school hip hoppers hate new school. Because everything we built and tried to protect people from, the new school turned around and spit in their face and said,
right.
No, we are this. We are everything, you know, but now the equalizer is now we're getting money and you can't say nothing about it because we got that money.
Gotcha.
Like, and that's the whole gist of a lot of the new school hip hop. Well, put it this way, a lot of the new school hip hop that we are being fed.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, back to the polka dots, it was like, okay, I'm not the guy with the fat gold chain and the sweatsuit. I'm not that dude.
Right.
I'm the guy that comes in smooth. I dress up, blah blah blah, and that whole polka dot style. You couldn't wear that style with the ultra street look to it. You had to dress up. Rocking that style.
That's
so it was one of those things as well.
That's it. You know, speaking of the style, your music was definitely unique. You had a sound unlike any other at that time. And I think it's a perfect opportunity for our listeners to jump into one of your tracks. We're going to play Only You from Kwame. This is from 1990 from the album A Day in the Life of Polkadelic Adventure right here on Down with the Kings. Check it out.
You know, we've been together for some time, and I've been experiencing some kind of feelings that's changed and rearranged for the better. And I hope that you've been feeling the same way, and pray that you ain't running game. Hey, just what do you have to say?
As I'm sitting here thinking about you, suddenly I feel the same.
You do? Just explain once more, okay? Check it out. It don't take a genius to know I care for you. Love, cherish, respect, can always be there for you. Why not? It's quite simple. A love affair like this, I can truly get my heart into. Haven't you? Cause you're my morning flower. For you, I give my fortune, fame, and power. No, I'm not kidding. But shouldn't we just enjoy this and take it as it is? You do? So do I. Don't you see each other apple in my sleepy eyes? My dear, I must confess that I'm your love slave and you're my empress. I love you like a wife, mother, sister, or daughter. Wash up your every move, even drink your bath water. I'm not playing, it's true, and my love is for only you. See, you got the picture. So come over here, let's get freaky. You ready? One and a, two and a, one. I wanna do it like and give it to you just like. Come over here and do it like. Turn around and I do a little something like.
Was that song? Because, you know, I mean, I'm thinking your music overall was a lot of fun, but certainly that song. What kind of memories do you have when you're producing that track?
You know what's so funny? It wasn't supposed to be my record. That record was written, I wrote and produced that record for Vanessa Williams, of all people.
Okay.
And I didn't make the album in time. So then it turned into an experiment. And the experiment was, people don't seem to realize, you wake up, you go to sleep with hip-hop. But back then, especially here in the States, radio stations did not like hip-hop.
Mm-hmm.
And they used to have things called the no-rap workday. So that means between 6 o'clock in the morning and 6 o'clock at night, no radio station was going to play rap, period.
Wow.
So my thing was, I'm going to disguise an R&B record into a rap record. Because I want to wake up in the morning and hear my song at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
You know, and, you know, there was other exceptions. You know, you had your Heavy D's that were doing it. You had your Salt and Peppers that were doing it. But these guys, they built up a fan base. So by the time 1990 hit, you know, they were already in the system. Me, I'm still a new jack. You know, Heavy D, Salt and Pepper, these guys came out in 85, 86.
Right.
So by 1990, you know, they built their thing. So I put out Only You, and it worked. And then after that, you know, you had so many people like Father MC and all these other rappers pretty much doing my style. They just did the same thing.
Right.
And then,
right.
you know, it helped usher a sound that turned into like BBD Poison and all that kind of stuff that helped create that style and that sound.
Right, right. You mentioned Poison. I mean, I heard that you had some involvement with that song for BBD way back in the day. You want to tell that story?
Real long and short of it, I was hanging out with Michael Bivins one day, and he played the demo of Poison. And he was like, you know, me, Ronnie, and Rick, we're making a group. And I did not believe him for nothing. I was like, yeah, right, whatever. And he was like, yeah, we're going to make a group, and we're going to sing, and we're going to rap. We got the song part. We just need the rap part. So we were going to a club, and on the way to the club, I asked for a napkin and a pen, and by that time I had the raps written. And it ultimately turned into more of all of Ronnie DeVoe's rhymes and some of Mike's, but mostly Ronnie DeVoe's rhyme on Poison.
Wow.
And I didn't think that song was ever going to come out.
What about the song? Was it that you didn't feel?
I just didn't get it. I just didn't get it at the time. I don't know.
Your crystal ball was on the fritz, I guess.
Albums,
man.
Yeah, man. I appreciate it now. But what I'm saying is, I just didn't get it.
Right. I got you. I want to talk about another show that maybe is a bit closer to reality for you. You were part of the alumni featuring, you know, some cats from back in the day. Chubb Rock, Special Ed, Dana Dane, Moni Love was on that as well. What was that experience like? Because one thing I'm most intrigued and curious about is, did you work with any of those artists to that degree prior to the show?
Well, the alumni is very, very important. And just to give you a real clear picture of what the alumni is a collective, like you said, featuring myself, Chubb Rock, Special Ed, Dana Dane, Moni Love, and our satellite member is members are Nice and Smooth.
Mm-hmm.
And what we do is we all get on stage together at one time, at the same time, and we do our records. We do a complete show, just blending all of our records together in one show. And the purpose of that is to show, one, how unified classic hip-hop can be.
Mm-hmm.
Two, it's like we moving as a force is sometimes stronger than moving as an individual. And we are able to, because everybody's style in this group are different. So
yep.
now we're able to pull in five different audiences for one show for the purpose of classic hip hop. So there's people in the audience that may not like Kwame records, but they'll come away from the show going, yo, that dude Kwame killed it.
Right.
Or they may like not like Chubb Rock records, and they'll say the same thing. Or they may not like Dana Day, and they'll say the same thing. So on that, no, it's like it was a way that that I constructed it to everybody to have some good employment, number one, and number two, also put on a great show. You know, like I said, I'm a producer, so I like to produce projects, and that was one of them. That is one of them that's dear to me, because it produces it has a give back and
yep.
and it has a return. I mean, I love it. You know, I actually prefer to do shows with the alumni more than I prefer to do shows by myself, because I have so much fun. It's like we have over an hour of pure fun on stage. We bug
right.
out with each other. We
right.
joke on each other. We joke on the crowd. We just have nothing but
right.
straight up fun, and I love it.
And that's what fans will absolutely love and walk away with, because it's a totally different type of experience. I mean, you know, you know, back in the day when you were buying cassettes for each individual artist, you know, it was just that. Like, I'm here to see Kwame, Special Ed, whatever. And now you're blending it all in together into one. And I think also what it really does, Kwame, is it gives an opportunity to expand audiences of one another, because I'm sure you probably picked up a few followers after that.
Yeah. No, it definitely does expand the audience, and especially when we do, like, for example, we recently did London, and
mm-hmm.
you know, it was just like it was just an audience that me personally I wasn't used to, but they got used to me,
right?
And we had a great time, you know. Our next place, I think we were supposed to be going to Nigeria.
Wow.
Like, that's something that we never thought we would do. We
right.
gotta, you know, personally, I've never, you know, somebody might throw a rock in my window, but I've never been to Toronto. That's a place I would love to perform. I've never been out there.
Right.
And I will tell you right now, anytime, 100% of the time, when I meet, like, one of the most beautiful women I've ever seen, I go, where are you from? Toronto. I'm like, oh my God, I gotta go to Toronto.
We do okay here. We do okay here, Kwame.
Yeah, y'all doing more than okay, man.
Gotcha. Well, I got to say, Kwame, I appreciated sharing and hearing and laughing and getting caught up with you and your career. Congratulations. I know you're nowhere near done, but, you know, your body of work is enjoyable and impressive. Tell our listeners what you got on tap, what's happening in your world, and where they end up with you.
Yeah, I was about to say that. My new label is called Make Noise. It is distributed by Universal Records, and the first artist on the label is an artist that has sold a million records on their own right, is a soul artist named Vivian Green. And Vivian will be doing her latest album. It's called Vivid, and that album comes out July 7th, and the single called Get Right Back to My Baby will be on, the single and the video will be on iTunes April 7th. And so we're just gearing up. I produced the entire album.
Nice.
So I'm real excited about that. You know, Vivian has a very large body of work. This is her fifth album, and you know, she chose to do it with me. So that's real dope. And so, you know, I'm just getting ready to blast this Make Noise rocket ship off, you know, and really do some real creative things with the record label. I don't want to be a conventional record label. I don't want to be, you know, just the run of the mill. Okay, another producer with a quote unquote label. Like,
right.
The things that I'm trying to do with the label will. It's set up to far exceed me as an individual. So So, you know, I'm really looking forward to that. So between that and, you know, shows this whole summer, we're running around. The alumni, you know, myself, I still perform.
Nice.
I love to bring classic hip hop to wherever will have me. And if, you know, you need to reach me, I'm a heavy online social networker, man. I'm the worst. Sometimes people are like, will you put your phone down? So I'm on Instagram, and my Instagram is Kwame Vision, spelled, you know, correctly, Kwame Vision. And on Twitter, it's Kwame Did It, D-I-D-I-T, Kwame Did It. And, yeah, and I'm on Facebook, Kwame the Boy Genius. So check me out. I'm always saying something and doing something. So.
Well, we appreciate you for doing that again. Appreciate you being here, Down with the Kings. This is Kwame, absolute pleasure. We'll be right back, folks.